Welcome to the Editor's Podcast for the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice. Today, Dr. Lloyd Novick, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal, highlights new work appearing in the September 2020 issue, which focuses on evidence-based public health. Dr. Novick, the September issue of the Journal focuses on evidence-based public health, and the title of your lead editorial is JPHMP and the Guide to Community Preventive Services. Can you discuss the importance of these themes and their relevance to the founding and the mission of the journal?
Evidence-based public health is important to practitioners working in the field. This was part of the mission of the journal when we founded the journal more than 25 years ago, to bring the latest evidence to inform practice. As such, the Guide to Preventive Services, which also has many evidence-based resources for practitioners, is extremely important. And over the years, we have published a number of their systematic reviews. We have particularly emphasized reviews on the social determinants of health. So we have published a number of articles from the Community Guide to Preventive Services on early education and high school education. In this issue, we publish an article on housing for the homeless, which we'll be talking about later in the podcast.
Why don't we go ahead and talk about that article by Yinan Ping, A Community Guide Systematic Review on Housing of the Homeless, an Important Social Determinant of Health.
Yes, it looks at homeless persons and the type of housing that's most suitable for them. There's a standard approach to treating homeless persons with a disability called treatment first, which requires clients to be housing ready. That is, that they're in psychiatric treatment and they are substance free before and while receiving permanent housing. What this study investigated is how it would work if clients were housed when they were housing ready. That is, before they were substance free and before they were in psychiatric treatment. So they looked at a number of studies. They looked at 26 studies in the United States and Canada, and they compared their results with treatment first, housing first programs, and they found that housing first programs that didn't have the requirements of treatment first actually were successful. They decreased homelessness by 88% and improved housing stability by 41%. They also decreased emergency department use by 41% and hospitalization by 36%. So this is an example of how an evidence-based review, a systematic review, can reveal information on a treatment modality for the homeless, certainly a social determinant of health.
Can you tell us a little about the history of the Guide to Community Preventive Services?
The history of the Guide to Community Preventive Services began with meetings of the Council on Linkages between Academia and Public Health Practice starting in 1993. That council was made up of representatives, as the name implies, from practice organizations such as ASTO and NACHO, and academic organizations such as, at the time, the American Teachers of Preventive Medicine and the American College of Preventive Medicine, and also the American Public Health Association. The subject that was discussed was the Guide to Clinical Preventive Services, which gave evidence-based guidance for clinical decision-making. The question at hand was, could there be a similar public health guide informing community interventions? Could enough evidence be gathered? Could that evidence be useful for practitioners? Fortunately, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation was interested in this question as well and awarded several grants to the Council on Academia and Practice Linkages. A feasibility study was done. Evidence was gathered on four topics, including anemia, tuberculosis, immunization, and lead poisoning. It was found that there was enough evidence to inform practice with that evidence. Those findings were presented to the Agency for Health and Human Services and CDC. And following that, a task force was formed that eventually led to the formation of the Guide to Community Preventive Services. This Guide to Community Preventive Services and its associated task force have been invaluable to public health, providing a range of systematic reviews. Numerous contributions have been made, including those on vaccine preventable disease, tobacco use prevention and cessation, prevention of injury from motor vehicle accidents, and activity. Efforts like those of the task force go a long way towards establishing the prevention goals for our nation.
The opening commentary in this issue is by Gulzar Shah, and it looks at the gaps in public health workers' awareness of public health trends. Can you talk about that article a little?
Yes. The opening commentary on this issue, which includes authorship by two of our editorial board members, Gulzar Shah and J.P. Liger, also stresses the importance of evidence-based public health to public health practitioners. One of the basic skills that public health workers need, and an emerging concept through the years, has been reliance on evidence-based public health. And that is why in this issue, we do have a series of articles that illustrate this approach.
Can you describe some of those articles that look at evidence-based public health, as well as some that look at the community guide and accreditation?
Yes, we do have an article by Paul Irwin and co-authors that shows the association between evidence-based decision-making and accreditation of state health departments. They look at those individuals in state health departments who are responsible for implementing chronic disease programs, and they found that the respondents from states which had public health accreditation were significantly more likely to use evidence-based public health than participants from non-accredited states. Also, participants from accredited states were much more likely to use evidence-based public health in their discussions with legislators and governors. We have another article by Robot and colleagues looking at the use of evidence-based public health in accreditation of local health departments. And this study showed that those local health departments that relied on evidence-based public health were 4 times as likely to become accredited as those that did not. We also have an article by Allison Poehler and colleagues on the use of evidence-based diabetes interventions among local health departments. They did a study of 14 Missouri local health departments, and they found that influence that contributed to the use of evidence-based public health were in-person interactions, meetings with decision makers, and resources that included funding, organizational capacity, and partnerships. Another study of preparedness by Mallory Kennedy showed again the advantage of evidence-based public health. Finally, we have a study from Saudi Arabia, again about the use of evidence-based public health, showing the diffusion of this concept internationally.
Well, thank you, Dr. Novick. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. And it sounds like we have another great issue, chock full of really important information for practitioners and researchers.
Thank you.
This feature was brought to you by JPH MP Direct, the companion site of the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice. To read the September 2020 issue of the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice, which focuses on evidence-based public health, visit us online at www.journals.com/JPHMP.